This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm your other host, sometimes host, Matt Scalina.
Matt, it's great to talk to you again.
It's been a while. The Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast, it lives so close to my heart. And I listen along, but I haven't been on the air in a long time. So it's good to be back.
We're so glad to have you back. You're back for an amazing episode because we've got David Bash, president of Astria Properties. And we've had David on before. And he was a delightful guest to have before. But now they're not only doing the industrial sector, now they're doing the retail sector. And retail is something that everyone's chasing right now. So we wanted to have David to come back on the show, tell us all about that. So it's a great episode to have you back for.
Yeah, no, this is fantastic. You know, the one thing I was wondering, Corey, it's interesting. I keep hearing about what's happening in the commercial market, right? It's like, what asset classes are busy, which aren't. Can you just, I feel like it's been a while.
Yeah.
Let's get to July 2025.
Here's the Cole's notes. Development land is obviously challenged, which it's funny. On the episode, me and David talk about development land. I've got my opinions on like REDMA and all this stuff that they got to kind of relook at to try to get shovels in the ground, which you guys will probably know more on the pre-sale side of the condo market than I will. But development land obviously feels like it's very challenged right now. There's a lot of things working against it just because the sales on the sellable side maybe aren't there. The costs are up. Obviously, the NDP came out with the sort of the DCC kind of like deferral program they're trying to get going. So there's just got to be more incentives to get shovels in the ground because we need this. It's going to be a problem down the road if we don't. You know, it feels like people are coming back to the office more and more. It feels like office leasing is picking up a little bit. I don't really know if anyone's stroking big checks to buy office buildings right now.
Right.
But it definitely feels like they're coming back. If you look in markets like maybe Langley as an example on the 200th corridor there, I mean, it's a very tight office market. There's not a lot of office space there, but I mean, those markets feel like they're still really, really going, you know, a lot of things going well versus like the Vancouver market is still kind of, it's getting better.
But people are coming back to the office in Vancouver.
People are coming
well.
Back to the office a little bit more. I think one thing you're finding with Vancouver as well, which is kind of challenging because maybe you'll know more about this than I will, but maybe the people aren't as excited to live in the downtown core as they maybe were pre-COVID or to rent or buy.
It's an ongoing challenge.
And that definitely impacts the office market, right? Because people aren't maybe walking to work as much as they were pre-COVID. So that has impact. Industrial is a little bit slower now than it's been over the past few years.
But it was on fire
The darling of commercial real estate for the most part for almost a decade there. That's becoming a little bit more challenging on the side, on the buy side and the leasing side. We have more vacancy now. Rates are coming down. Things aren't, absorption of projects aren't as much. But one thing me and David talk about in the program is there's going to be a gap in the market where, you know, you fast forward 2 or 3 years and things kind of balance themselves out a bit better. But right now, things that aren't getting planned and aren't getting developed is going to create a problem down the road, just like in the residential, when it's needed and there's not enough product to kind of fill that absorption on an ongoing basis. And when you look at maybe the lower mainland marketplace, is there's always been a very low vacancy rate, you know, we'll call it sub 2% just for argument's sake. And there's always been a healthy supply of new product coming on. So you can determine that's ongoing demand. It's not pent up, it's ongoing because every year there's more coal getting shoved in the fire and the fire keeps burning. But right now we've had a little bit of a lull in that market, but it will eventually kind of like balance itself out and pick itself up.
Yeah.
And because we've had that ongoing demand for so long and new supply coming in that keeps a very low vacancy rate, when that absorption of the existing product comes on, everything that's not getting planned today is going to be problematic in 3 years.
So demand shock on
it should be. I'm not saying like, you know, you need to run out and buy an industrial building today to get into that. You may have a little bit more time, but I do think that the market will kind of bounce back up to maybe where it was. And I'm not saying it's going to go through the roof, but you will have a bit of a bounce back in that asset class. Retail is the darling right now. We really pushed retail in 2023 to people like this is the year that retail will rebound.
Right.
And anyone that kind of got into good retail in 2023 and 2024 is reaping the rewards of it now. And one of the challenges you're going to have with retail, I think when you look down the road, let's go to Kelowna, for example, like maybe the land price in Kelowna, maybe it's doubled or tripled over the past, you know, 5 years to acquire the land. My construction costs have probably gone up 50 to 100% in that same time period. And lease rates have maybe gone up like 20% or 30%. They haven't really kept up with lockstep of how things have increased. You can't really build it. So right. You're going to have a crunch on that asset class. That's why buying existing supply, and you hear things like sell is purchased for well below replacement cost value. It's because people can't really buy and build these things in all the markets. And David even makes mention about that too, about how Kelowna is maybe a tougher market developing because they want so much density for retail because they want condos above it, that it's not as lucrative as maybe some of the markets elsewhere. So I think when you look at markets like Nanaimo and stuff like that, like they're still really high up there to make the numbers work. But again, they're a smaller market where there's not as much product available. So retail kind of feels like it's a little bit more of the darling right now. And multifamily, I'm not the most expert in the multifamily side of things. Right. I'll be the first to say that. There's a lot of brokers that do a really, really good job that are really in the know with that asset class. But obviously cap rates have had to come up a little bit because interest rates have gone up over the years with it. And I think because you have, international students aren't really coming in. You're not having the immigration numbers we once did. That you are having a little bit more vacancy, which has been driving down rental rates a little bit more. Right. And in an asset class where I have gross rents and I got to pay all my bills out of whatever pays me, they're not triple net deals, that it becomes maybe a little bit more challenging to get into that asset class when I have a higher vacancy. And now maybe I have to like actually incentivize people.
Right.
Right. Before you never had to do that. Now you see things out there like 1 month free rent or, I saw things on the other day, it was 2 months free rent and a TV. Where it's kind of like trying to incentivize.
What size?
I want to say 55, but I didn't read the fine print. Like, I was almost going to lease it for the TV until he told me it was 55. If it was 80 inches,
we can be neighbors.
If it was 80 inch, I'm moving in. So there's actually incentive things now that we've never really had to speak of before. So anytime you get a little bit of a lull like that, but again, developers aren't building houses.
Yeah.
People are going to have to go rent.
Well, right? So it's all going to come back. On the multifamily side, it's interesting because there's the Cenac lands.
Yeah.
Granville and Broadway, I think there's a new tower there.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of rental coming on.
Yeah.
But nobody's building condo product, or at least not like they need to be.
And the other thing is too, is like people may, like you look at like the no Airbnb stuff that they took out. And I feel like the NDP is kind of pivoting a little bit where before it felt like it was an iron fist, like no Airbnbs. And now it's like, we're monitoring it. Right. So it's like, it feels like it's changed a little bit. But with that, if arguably, let's take a market like Kelowna, where I have like 500 hotel rooms, and maybe let's for argument say I have 500 Airbnb rooms, and now those 500 Airbnb rooms are now long-term rental product, that's going to jolt any market.
Yeah.
Right? So I think I just use Kelowna as an example because a lot of people, I think, bought stuff with the anticipation of the Airbnb stuff.
Well, and some of it was zoned Airbnb, right?
That, right.
And where that got changed.
And you look at some developer packages, they were like pretty much pitching people on Airbnb rental numbers.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a shock to the market. So you got more supply from like the condo side that's thrown back into the rental stock. You've got immigration numbers that are down. You've got no international students coming in. So all of that is naturally going to have impact on the vacancy rates of the multifamily side of things. So when you got all that kind of going on, it still seems like it's steady. And people are still buying stuff. It may just not be buying them at the clip they were, pre-COVID, where multifamily, it felt like you could almost list anything anywhere and you would get a lot of interest.
Yeah.
So, things are there. But I think, it's going to be needed in real estate, in commercial, like residential. It's not a get rich overnight thing, which a lot of people think it is. And that's just not how it works.
Yeah.
So you got to be penciling like medium to long term. And if you do that, it's always a good time to buy.
You heard it here first, folks. Well, maybe we should, should we cut to the talk?
Let's jump to our conversation today with David Bash, President, Astria Properties. It's a great one, guys. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial, John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca. This podcast is sponsored by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments. Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been nominated for Multifamily Builder of the Year for 10 consecutive years and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year. What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with two fitness areas, three children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca.
All right, I'm here today with David Bash, president of Astria Properties. David, how are you doing today?
Doing excellent. Thank you, Corey.
David, for those, we appreciate you coming back on the program. We had you on a while ago, and you guys are obviously growing and you're expanding, so we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. But maybe for those who haven't heard your previous episode, can you tell us maybe more a little bit about yourself, Astria Properties, and how you got into commercial real estate?
Yeah, for sure. I've been practicing commercial real estate a little bit over a decade now. I was very fortunate to spend most of my time with one of the big family development offices in Vancouver. Learned a lot there in all asset classes. And then in 2022, decided to make the leap to formally launch Astria Properties as a industrial boutique developer. And over the last 3 years, that business has expanded both geographically as well as in the asset in different asset classes. Obviously, really interesting time to try to start a business in 2022, as you would know.
Yeah.
We've been fortunate to have found some great assets and some great partners to support us, and we're a little over three years into it now, and we've grown our development portfolio and the portfolio that we're managing on behalf of some other clients up to nearly 1 million square feet. So
wow.
we've got lots on the go, and as I mentioned, we are now operating in both BC and Alberta, and most recently we've decided to expand into the retail asset class, which is something I had never thought of when we started this 3 years ago.
Let's talk about that. Obviously, retail feels like, you know, it's been, I don't want to say like a savior of the commercial real estate, because obviously industrials had a little bit of a slowdown, offices obviously had a bit of a slowdown, but it feels like retail's kind of chugged along. What was the decision that went into kind of, hey, that's the asset class we now want to potentially expand into?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, right? Because I guess you never really want to hop onto a hot trend. You kind of want to lead it, right? So we've been doing a lot of thinking about it, but the catalyst for us expanding into the retail asset class in the retail world was a project that we acquired in Colwood on the island in early 2023. It's in Royal Bay. Do you know Royal Bay?
I do. Well, yeah. Yep. Over there on the island. Yeah.
Fantastic community. You know, PCRE, or now Path Developments, created a master plan community there. Seacliff and Reliance are building the beach lands. It's really cool what's happening there. And so we looked at a piece of dirt there, you know, 3 acres right within our sort of strike zone. And the asset or the development really had a bunch of optionalities. So we were originally intending to do kind of an urban industrial project with some flex industrial, maybe a little bit of retail in it, but really more industrially oriented. And then the market started going sour on the industrial side, and things weren't going quite as we had planned. And we said, well, we knew that our backup option and the optionality that the site brought forward is retail, and kind of looked at ourselves and said, why are we not doing retail here anyways? Because it's a way better retail site than it is industrial site. So a bit of a light bulb moment happening there. You know, there's like 10,000 new roofs being built. There are 2 schools. It's close to university. There's a lot happening there. And
yeah.
With only one sort of neighborhood center that's grocery anchored in place and developed there, we felt there was a great opportunity for us to build more retail. And so we did a bit of rezoning work, went through about 200 iterations of site planning, because we obviously had no idea how to site plan a retail center. it's very different to industrial.
Yeah.
And throughout this process of learning retail and speaking with, you know, the right players in the market, the right brokers in the market, with the right tenants in the market, we really started getting this insight that, hey, like what we're doing on the industrial side, you know, smaller boutique projects on sub 4 acre sites, lots of built to suits, there's really a niche in the same in the retail space as well, right? Doing a built to suit, so to say, for Rexall is no different than building a warehouse for an industrial client. And so we developed out that concept and said, hey, like we see a lot of opportunity there, particularly in the secondary markets and tertiary markets across BC. We should spend more time on it. And then I hired Neil Martin, who I used to work with back in the day, to come on and really grow the retail portfolio for us. So we want to legitimize that business, create a business unit out of it, and really start seeking growth in that space.
So obviously retail's something that you need to mention there, that you guys are looking to grow and expand. Is it just the development side of the retail business that you're looking at, or would you guys look to maybe acquire, you know, existing assets, maybe that are underperforming or you can bring value to? Is that also something that Astra is looking to build out as part of that retail portfolio?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're pretty opportunistic. We'd like for there to be, you know, at least the value add component to it, if not actually development component. So we've seen lots of deals out there where maybe there's surplus parking and you can put a pad on the corner and whatnot.
Yeah.
With that being said, you know, generally speaking, the retail deals in the market, they're not many out there. And it's obviously a pretty competitive space. I'd be curious to sort of get your feedback and thought on what you're seeing as far as retail investment sales these days. I know you guys are busy in that space.
Yeah, you nailed it right there. They're very few and far to come by right now. I do feel like you are seeing maybe some larger scale stuff that is being shopped around, and that could be for various reasons. Maybe it's an institution or a pension fund that's maybe looking to get a little bit more cash in the bank during uncertain times. But the stuff that people really, really want is very hard to come by, and the deals are very few and far between right now. And I think a big thing is, and I've been very vocal about this in our company, is, I mean, when you read a lot of stuff there that the commercial transactions are down and all that stuff, but I can tell you from like the buyer side, like the buyer pool feels like it's almost bigger than ever, because everyone hasn't really been able to transact on stuff. Right. And everyone's looking for stuff. And I think on the seller side, they're kind of like, oh, it's not a good time to sell. Why would I sell? But I think when you look at it from that perspective, and we're working on a couple of things off market right now, we've had a couple of transactions where buyers have probably got maybe higher than expected on the asset, on the retail side of it, just because the pool of buyers feels like it's pretty large and there's not really a lot of inventory to pick from. So maybe a good property may look like a great property right now, just because there's nowhere else to really kind of compare it to. But with that said, you got to really look at 2025 pricing. You know, you can't have a 2021 expectation. And that's why I think they're very few and far between. I do really think if we did have more inventory to kind of pick through, that the transaction volume would pick up, just because the buyers seem, you know, a little more eager now than they maybe did 6 months ago. Lenders feel a little bit more eager right now because maybe they haven't got a lot of their book lent the first half of the calendar year that they thought they would. So now as we're heading into the back half of the calendar year, they're looking to kind of deploy that capital. Maybe their expectations or criteria is maybe coming off slightly from a lender perspective because they just want to get money working in the system there. But retail's extremely hard to come by. Good retail's even harder to come by, and deals are very few and far between for those who are looking right now. But hopefully, fingers crossed, things will shake loose a little bit here and we can maybe figure out what's going on. I think it's the uncertainty thing that's out there, that people just don't know what to transact on or when to transact on it, because you've got political uncertainty, you've got trade uncertainty and all of that stuff. So it's a little harder to come by right now than maybe we've seen in previous years for those retail assets people are looking for.
Yeah. And interestingly, what you said is, you know, I agree with you, the liquidity in the retail market is quite strong, right? Whether it's institutional capital chasing large format retail that's in the path of growth.
Yeah.
Or it's your accountant buddies or lawyer buddies who want a 5 or 6 cap or 7 cap asset. Yeah. If you go to Alberta, Tim Hortons drive-through, right? It's like a $2-3 million deal. They can scratch that money together and get a good cash flowing opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that really attracts me to the retail space, and particularly projects like the one we're building on the island of Butte's Landing, which is about 42,000 square feet of neighborhood retail. You know, it's a 2.5 acre site, 3 acre site. There's a real opportunity that in 30, 40 years from now, that might be a high rise site.
Yeah.
Right. So the long-term outlook on the low density retail developments, I think is really appealing to us.
Yeah, and I think you mean it creates future opportunities on that asset class, maybe more so than some other asset classes, because you do get these retail, you know, strip centers that do have an abundance of parking, and maybe that's required for the tenancies under the zoning and within the communities they sit in. But it does create future maybe development opportunities down the road. And I think when you look at communities like a Kelowna or like a Nanaimo or something like that, Up Island, or you mean where you're seeing above average growth on an annual basis, you're seeing a lot more roofs get built, you know, the accessibility and affordability of these properties mm-hmm. feel like they're a little bit maybe easier in a Nanaimo maybe than you might find in like a Coquitlam. And I think, you know, retail offers that, you know, typically an office asset class or maybe a big industrial park maybe wouldn't have the same development potential as maybe a really good strip center that sits on, you know, 2 acres and has 110 parking stalls to service the square footage there. So it makes it very, very appealing. The project you guys are working on in RBUs, I'm very interested. And obviously, we've sort of followed this project and we see the marketing that's out there. And right now, who do you guys envision? Who's the anchor are we anchoring this with? You mentioned about like a neighborhood thing. Are you guys going after like a small grocer anchor? Like how do you envision the tenant mix of a project such as the Arbutus project you guys are working on?
Yeah, well, it's we're pretty proud of the success of that project to date. So we're actually 75% pre-leased already. We
Amazing.
Only broke ground about 2 months ago.
Amazing.
So the activity on that site and on that deal has been really strong. We're thrilled to welcome Rexall as our drug anchor to the site.
Great.
They're taking 10,000 square feet out of the 42. And then we recently inked a deal with the daycare. The daycare space is as active and busy as ever.
Yeah.
I think we got like 7 to 10 offers, letter of intents for the daycare space. So there's an array of different operators to pick from. That's been a great process to go through. And then we've also solidified early on a deal with the veterinary clinic. And then we have 4 buildings on site. So one building being Rexall, one building being the vet building. And then we have we call it the QSR pad. Really, it's not drive-through, unfortunately, but we have about 5,500 square feet there. And we are currently working through 2 leases there with some quick serve restaurants.
Awesome.
We have a local fitness company that's committed, the lease is signed. So, you know, we're now at the stages where we filled the big pieces, the important pieces, right? We don't want to build a center without an anchor. So having Rexall and welcoming Rexall is really important to us. And now we're really trying to round out Arbutus Landing to be the best amenity to Royal Bay and exactly cater to the community what the people need and what the people deserve, right? So we are obviously competing with the Commons next door, although it's a different retail offering given it's grocery anchored. So we'd love to have a bank in our center. We've got some really nice space sort of reserved for a bank tenant along Michosin Road there with great frontage and signage opportunities. You know, we'd like to continue pushing with some of the more neighborhood services, whether that be an optometrist, a dentist, or insurance. But that being said, we only have, you know, 25% of the space left, so not a lot. We're in active negotiations with various tenants. So we're fully confident that we'll lease this whole project out before construction completion, which would be a great success. And we've also managed to implement a really, really good tenant roster.
Well, I'd say that's huge success because I can speak from the brokerage side of things. Pre-leasing projects outside of the Lower Mainland has never been an easy task, because you do sometimes go into some of these secondary and tertiary markets where they just don't have the same lease-up effect as they do over here. And maybe some people aren't as hesitant, or some companies are more hesitant, unless you're dealing with national companies, I get it, that are hesitant to lease off of floor plans. They kind of want to get in, physically touch the space. So the lease-up patterns of some of these centers or projects outside of Lower Mainland take a lot longer to get to it. And a lot of times you're having inventory available post-deliverable to your existing tenants, but to get that type of lease up this early on, I think speaks to the demand of retail, and obviously mm-hmm. speaks to the demand of what you guys are producing, because that's not the norm from what we typically see where you get that much traction on it.
Yeah, and I think Royal Bay is quite unique, right? It's a big master plan community that's been in the works for many years. You know, the old saying, the sort of the old real estate practice of you need to go walk, live and breathe the site before you buy it is like totally true. When we acquired the site in 2023, I flew out there with our partners and we walked on the piece of dirt and we experienced the construction and we overlooked the ocean, the views that we have. And it just felt really right, aside from, you know, the demographics and the statistics really supporting more retail. As I said, there's like 10,000 doors being built. There's schools there. There's traffic there. It's a great market. It's a really affluent area, high household incomes that really demand retail services. There's about 22,000 people who live within a kilometer radius. So we felt really, really comfortable despite, you know, our lack of experience in the retail asset class, that we knew the demand would be here. And that's come true so far, which is great.
So obviously you guys are looking to build out that portfolio now that you have a team member on that's sort of specializing to help you with that. What markets are you guys excited for? Or what markets are you guys looking into to try to expand that retail side of the portfolio?
If we could do 10 more Arbutus Landing projects, obviously that would be our preference.
Yeah, but, for sure.
They're just simply hard to come by, right? And one of the big reasons is that a lot of retail in today's world sits in mixed-use projects with residential above, and we don't do residential, and we don't intend to. So finding sites that are pure low-density neighborhood service commercial, they're very difficult to come by, especially in the Lower Mainland market. So by default, we have to progress or have to move into some of the tertiary markets. Yep. You know, even Kelowna to a point is too big to kind of build these assets because the city will want to see more density. So we go up north and we go up east as far as Alberta, you know, into some of the like smaller markets. We recently went on a trip to Medicine Hat. That's a population, I think it's like 60 to 90,000 people. So it's got enough scale to it where, you know, we feel if we found the right site, services, the right, you know, population with the right sort of retail, we'd feel comfortable doing a project there. But, you know, given our business model has always been structured around smaller boutique projects, we're spending a great deal of time looking at drive-through only projects in some of the really small markets, right? So if we find a half an acre to three-quarter acre of a site, we'd love to build it for Tim Hortons, A&W, Wendy's. Obviously, a McDonald's deal would be fantastic to do. So we kind of touch a breadth of the different retail types within the retail asset class. And so we don't shy away from looking at places like Golden, for example, or Grand Forks, or, you know, if we're going to Alberta, as I mentioned, a Medicine Hat or Airdrie, any of those places, which are smaller markets. But, you know, if we find the right site and the demand is there, you know, we'd be comfortable to buy a site that we know will attract a good national covenant tenant with a 15, 20 year lease at a good cap rate. So that's quite exciting. I think that's one of the big pieces to the retail world that I love so much is the certainty when you buy the right piece of dirt.
Yeah.
Right. If you get a good high exposure property with lots of vehicle traffic and you understand the retail competition in the market, like you go to Grand Forks and let's just say, for example, that there wasn't a Tim Hortons deal in there. You know that Tim Hortons wants to be there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the chance of actually executing on a deal is really strong. And then the risk really only lies within construction. And as you know, we are a fully integrated business with Orion Constructions, our sister company. And so when we're able to control both the absorption and demand piece because of certainty that we find a tenant plus the construction, all of a sudden these deals present a very low risk profile to us. And we certainly would love to do many of these.
You talk about a market like Medicine Hat and the population there. Is there certain metrics, without giving away your secrets, is there certain, like the community has to have no less than 45,000 people in a trade area of 90,000 for it to be considered? Is there a threshold or a criteria that you guys have sort of internally that these markets would work based on how what we see versus these markets are too small for us?
Yeah, the first check for us is always what's the competition or what's the existing retail in that market. If let's just say we find a site, we say, well, who's here? Is McDonald's, A&W, Wendy's, Starbucks, Tim Hortons here? And then if one of them isn't there, that would be the first logical target. Then we look at exposure, right? Especially for these smaller deals where we're doing drive-throughs, we need to have the vehicle traffic, and then we start looking at population base. You know, we wouldn't invest in a really small community that only has a few hundred people living there, and nor would any of these retail tenants be interested in building a project there. With that being said, you know, when we look at these really small deals, any of the tertiary markets are an opportunity for us. When we're looking at projects like Arbutus Landing, we need to have a market with scale, right? Because we need to be mindful that there is enough population there to have the retail service it. So if we're building 40,000 square feet, we want to make sure that, you know, we can actually fill all 40,000 square feet. The other thing that's really important for us when we build some of these bigger projects is to ensure that there is liquidity in the market in the event we want it to sell, which is not our intent. But again, our whole MO within or for Astria is to do real estate projects that have optionality, so we don't get caught in bad markets. So, you know, building a project that only makes sense on a merchant basis and building it in a market where the liquidity isn't there, like if it's a $20-30 million asset in one of the smaller markets where the liquidity wouldn't be there, we simply wouldn't do it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One thing that we talked about before we hit record here, and we can go as deep into this or as shallow as you want. You mentioned Alberta, and it does feel like there's a lot of optimism in the province. I can say from a brokerage standpoint, there is a lot of buyers on the investment side that now would potentially consider Alberta that maybe years ago they wouldn't consider Alberta, as well as from the brokerage business side, it makes, you know, logistical sense for us to open in Alberta before Ontario when we have these 7 BC offices. But it is something that's very high on our radar that we do have sort of, I'd say, active conversations with agents and groups in that marketplace from a brokerage standpoint, where we would look to eventually have offices over there as well, because the market feels like it's really, really getting a lot of momentum. Why does Astria like Alberta? Like, what are you seeing there versus BC that makes your business model work?
I think first and foremost is the political side of things. Obviously, conservative, very much business-oriented and growth-oriented. Yeah. I think Danielle Smith is doing a lot of great things, putting Alberta on the world stage, the global stage.
Fully agree with you on that.
And those sort of tailwinds for business to succeed, and business succeed, then there'll be demand for industrial real estate and retail real estate. So that's one of the primary drivers. You know, we obviously chase returns, and sure, Calgary from an industrial perspective has a higher vacancy rate than Vancouver, but you know, finding the right assets and the right developments and income properties have a lower risk profile, in my opinion, or have a low risk profile similar to Vancouver, and you just get a better cap rate out of it. So we see way more land availability in Calgary from a development perspective, which, yep, you know, for us, we're a young company. We don't have a massive balance sheet, particularly in today's world where the development activity in Vancouver is super sluggish. So finding growth is challenging, and we don't have the luxury of just sitting on our hands doing nothing. So it felt like Calgary ticks all the right boxes for us politically, economically. People are moving there. You know, we can bring our expertise to the market there. We feel, you know, there's things we do really well in British Columbia that will be well accepted in Calgary. And so we've made the decision to expand there, and we'll have some exciting news to release about all that over the next 2 to 3 months as we're letting the market know of our expansion. Yeah, I just enjoy working with the people in Calgary. Very much business-minded. Vendors there are vendors. They will do business, and they will be accepting of, you know, rational arguments around valuations and structures and whatnot. So we've just found good success there, uncovering opportunities as well as actually negotiating deals that make sense to us.
Now, when we talk about the greater Calgary area or Alberta as a whole, are we talking about retail expansion? Are we talking about potentially industrial expansion for you guys as well? Is there one asset class or multiple asset classes that you guys are looking at over in Alberta?
Yeah. So if you look at the progression of our business,
yeah,
3 years ago, we were single asset class, single geographic region.
Yep.
Pretty tough in today's world.
Yeah,
right?
I agree. I agree.
Very hard to find growth. So we, as part of our, you know, 3-year strategic plan in year 3, our goal was to find an expansion market. And similar to your comment earlier, like, I'm sure I can speak for the both of us, we don't like jumping on a red eye flight Sunday night to go to Toronto to 8 a.m.
Not at all.
Grinding out a week. It's pretty tough.
Yeah.
You know, the other strategic advantage for us is, of course, that Orion Construction has experience in Alberta.
Yeah.
Previously built there. So we decided to build a business case for our industrial expansion into Alberta. And I won't share too much about it because we're about to release a bit of a teaser on everything that we're doing in Alberta and why on the industrial side. So we're looking forward to telling the market.
Absolutely.
And then from there on, we decided to expand into retail, as we discussed earlier. And Alberta is just a really natural opportunity for us there. So where we stand today, we have, you know, we're multidisciplinary or multi-asset class in two different geographic regions, which allows us to just, you know, sort of weather the storm at the moment and keep growing, because certainly the opportunities in Vancouver are quite limited today.
David, it's a final question before we get to our six pack of lighthearted questions we're going to ask you here is, you've been in this industry for quite a while. What is your take on the market right now? We'll maybe say BC focus there. What do you think is going on? What's going to happen? What's happening now, and how does the next 6 months to a year maybe play out in your mind when it comes to the BC commercial real estate market?
Yeah, this is a long-winded, could be a long answer, but I try to keep it short. Many of the people who know me know I'm pretty nerdy on the economy and politics and all this type of stuff, as you probably tell by my LinkedIn. But you know, we're without a doubt, we're in a quite challenging spot in the British Columbia real estate market. You need to dissect it by asset class. You know, the amount of pre-sale condo that's out there, and I don't know that market well anymore, is intimidating. And I think it's scary to see what this means for all of the developers over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, right? Because I just think there's projects out there that they don't pencil, but something needs to happen with them. And I'd be curious to get your thought on the residential side. On retail, we are seeing some retail activity slow down a little bit. You know, the market has been quite hot, and we've seen lease rate escalations on the retail side as a result of construction costs going up, and the tenants are willing to pay that. You know, given where the economy is at today and consumer sentiment and retail spending numbers, obviously those businesses are hit. So we're seeing that slowing down a little bit. With that being said, on the retail side, generally speaking, the businesses that are good businesses, they have huge store expansion mandates. It's the QSRs, the drugstores, it's the grocery stores. And given it's so hard to find real estate, there'll be a lot of absorption there, a lot of demand for that type of space. So I feel good about retail. The other thing too is sort of, not to sidetrack, is we came out of COVID, or we started in COVID, and everybody's like, oh, e-commerce is great. You know, it's convenient and fast and quick, but you know, Amazon doesn't cut your hair.
Yeah.
And Instacart doesn't allow you to look at a head of lettuce and sort of judge what quality is, right? And I think people are missing the human interaction of just being out there and shopping, whether it's for groceries, clothes, whether it's going to Shoppers Drug Mart. And of course, the e-commerce side of things has made things convenient, but there's a human component to it. And I think that's why retail has performed so well. And that'll keep going. Albeit, you know, leasing rates are probably leveling off a little bit here, just given what happens with consumer sentiment.
Yeah.
And then on the industrial side, I love the fact that Canada and BC are finally waking up to take advantage of what we have. You know, our location, our resources, our land, our water, all that stuff. And it seems like we're moving in the right direction to turn Canada into the country it should be.
Yep.
In terms of independence and utilizing all the benefits we have to drive prosperity and growth. And so alongside that, we'll be the industrial sector. We remain the China gateway. Our port is critically important to North American logistics system. And we're at the point now where we've seen price adjustments both on the land leasing and strata side, where you know things are not quite penciling, but we generally feel we can start looking at some strata deals again, which is really the only thing that pencils in British Columbia or in BC and Vancouver anyways. And so we feel strongly about it. Our market is still tight, and as we start inducing some demand into this space, we'll go back to low vacancy rate in no time. And given that nobody started projects, we could end up in sort of a squeeze situation again.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. I think the problem is right. Not the problem is, the problem will be is all the projects that aren't kind of happening now, as the absorption kind of takes in, and there'll be almost like a gap in the marketplace because there won't be enough new projects coming online to sort of fill that going demand. And that's where the squeeze kicks in again. But I'll provide two of my thoughts to your thoughts there. So with regards to residential, I think obviously the government, I think, has to relook at things to get shovels in the ground. And recently the NDP came out and they sort of talked about the DCC kind of referrals, where 25, I believe it's 25% now, and then the balance pay within 4 years and or the delivery of the product to try to get shovels in the ground. I think another thing too, from a developer standpoint, you know, REDMA, the Real Estate Developing Marketing Act, that only gives you so much time from the time you actually file your strata plan with the LTO, the Land Title Office, and your disclosure statement with the Superintendent of Real Estate to actually secure your construction financing. And I think if I'm a developer, and before I go dump hundreds of thousands of dollars or maybe millions of dollars into a showroom and marketing costs and all of this stuff, I got to be really confident that I can secure my financing in time so my project doesn't fold. I don't have to fold up my project. And I think when you look at it from the lender standpoint, as markets become tighter and tighter and tighter, the threshold that you have to hit your pre-sale numbers probably go up. So maybe it's not 50% pre-sales before you get the construction finance. Maybe it's 65. So yeah. The goalposts are moving on me as a developer. The bar becomes higher that I have to hit in order to secure my financing, but my timeline in order to secure my financing hasn't changed. So if I'm kind of stuck in a window that I'm not confident in, I might just sit back. And I think when you look at it, I think that obviously maybe needs to get relooked at. I think, you know, I mean, the Airbnb thing, I mean, that I think also now it feels like the NDP is kind of like, oh, we're monitoring it, where it felt like before it was like an iron fist. It's like, here's what we're doing. And I think when you look at like international ownership, you know, all the speculation tax that's thrown at it. And I think one challenge you have when you talk about affordability, this is over and above all the city costs and all that stuff that go in that you guys would know a lot about, is the affordability issue is going to become, well, if there's going to be 300 homes built on this site, and let's say just for argument's sake, 10% or 15% of my pre-sale buyers out of the gate might be speculators. They're going to buy it. They're going to try to flip the paper or something to that effect. Well, if I take all those people out because of all the taxes now that are implemented into that, I understand the point of tax. I'm not saying you don't have to pay tax, but there's just so much thrown at it. Almost is a scary thing to look at. And I don't have any international buyers coming in that have never really ever really probably been the problem that everyone anticipated. That could be 15 or 20% of my sales I need. Well, if I have to get to 65% of my, you know, to secure my bank financing, and I arguably have 10, 15, or 20% of that 65% doesn't exist anymore because they've been scared off, the affordability question is going to be those 300 condos are not going to get built now because the developer can't get financing under REDMA to get it off. So the affordability question becomes, is it the price that people are paying to get the house, or is it the fact that houses aren't going to get built now and immigration will reopen and you're going to have another massive crunch on this and no homes in the pipeline? So I think there's so many facets that are impacting that residential standpoint. And I'm not a developer by any stretch. We don't do pre-sale condos. I'm not an expert in that. But looking at it from the outside, just from a number perspective, and feel like the goalposts are continuously moving on these people, that it gets to the point where it's like, maybe we shouldn't be as aggressive to build houses in this province right now, because we got too many things coming at us. Let's go to Alberta. And when you have people coming to BC that already feels like you have a housing crunch, you know, you got to try to incentivize developers to put shovels in the ground so we can keep filling this as we go. And I think with a comment about retail, I think it was 2023 in our outlook, we're like, buy retail. Like, this is the year to buy retail, because everybody looks at historical data. Well, historical data on retail wasn't very good probably coming out of COVID. That if you looked at historical data, you're like, I don't want to buy that. But smart investors are forward thinkers. And to your point there, that is exactly what I think it is. The face of retail is changing. But the dentist on the retail level isn't coming to my house to fix my tooth. Starbucks, although I can get it picked up and dropped off by DoorDash, is not going to come in my house to make my coffee. So the face of retail is changed coming out of COVID. But I think it's stronger because now these businesses that are in there are probably not pandemic proof, but are probably better from a landlord perspective, that retail now has become a lot hotter of an asset because the historical data wasn't very strong and nobody wanted to buy or lend against it. But now everyone feels like they're chasing it because it's got so much upside, no different than why you guys are doing the project Arbutus Walk there. Because you've got so much upside, you've got such demand for it, but then you also have future plans down the road that maybe 20, 30 years down the road, this site might be repurposed for something different. And that doesn't really get offered in a lot of the other asset classes. So we're very bullish on retail. It feels like us and everybody else, but I think that's kind of the thing that people need to look into if they're looking to make those investments. David, thank you so much for joining us. I know we're tying up a bunch of your time here, but before we let you go here, we have a six-pack of lighthearted questions. We ask all of our guests, can we ask you to stick around for a few more minutes?
For sure.
Excellent. First question up. When you find the time, where's your favorite vacation spot?
Oh, I think last year I said it was Palm Springs. Still love that. I have two young kids now, so I will take that still into consideration because it's easy. It's a short flight. I have like anxiety of taking my children on an 8-hour flight. So I'll stick with that. It's quiet. It's hot. It's nice. I can play golf. Love that place. So Palm Springs it is.
So you're in Palm Springs. It's Friday night and you've had a few too many drinks and someone gives you a karaoke mic. What song are you singing?
You know, I like old rock, so maybe some CCR.
Oh, yep. Good. Good one. Good choice.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that said, my kid really loves CCR too. So particularly, I heard it from the Grapevine. I don't know if you know that song.
Yep. It's awesome. Yep.
My kid loves dancing and jamming out to it. So I hear that at home a lot, that song. So that would be it.
Awesome. Great choice. You've been in this business for quite some time. Looking back on your career here, what would you tell your younger self now as a piece of advice that you've learned over the past decade?
Definitely learn to be uncomfortable. You know, if you want to grow in this business, you need to put yourself into challenging positions and with bold ideas. And the worst thing that anybody can ever say is no.
Yep.
And that's it, right? And so for the young generation that is working hard out there in today's world, which is really difficult. You want to set yourself apart, come up with bold ideas and, you know, present them to management. And if they say no, there's at least a recognition of effort there. I think it's really important.
Great advice. You've unfortunately done something horribly wrong. You're going to get put on death row, but you're allowed one meal before it's all said and done. What meal are you having?
Yeah. Vodka pasta with a side steak.
Oh, that was quick. Actually, that sounds delicious. Any particular cut of steak? That was, you sound very passionate about that answer. Any particular cut of?
We started this. My sister-in-law, she makes this really good vodka pasta. And so whenever we have like a celebratory dinner with the family, that's what she used to make. And we do a side steak and it's such an incredible combination. And so it has to be a ribeye in my opinion, because that's the best cut of the steak. You know, ideally maybe a little charred on the outside, like Chicago style. Just really nice. Yeah.
Sounds good. A quote that you live by.
My grandpa always used to say to me, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So, especially in today's world where there's just a lot of ambiguity and change and bad news and all that stuff, I think you just take it day by day.
Good quote.
There's always a path forward. Worth keeps spinning.
Last question up. What are you binge watching at home? Maybe on Amazon or Netflix. What if I jumped into your TV there? What would I find?
Probably a lot of Trash Truck and Puffin Rock.
They haven't got into Bluey yet?
No, they don't. They like Bluey too.
Bluey's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I just saw that the new season of Tour de France is out. I'm not a cyclist, but I have huge admiration for those guys. I feel like they're the epitome of pushing a human body beyond its limits.
Oh, what they imagine. Do
is pretty nuts. And so I binge watched the previous episodes when I first got into it, and I intend on doing the same with the newest season.
Amazing. Well, David, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. How can our listeners find out more about yourself, Astra, your properties, what you guys got going on over there?
Yeah, you can visit us on our website, www.astraproperties.com. We're pretty active on social media, LinkedIn, as well as Instagram. Our email addresses are also on our websites, and I'm always open for a coffee chat or a conversation or a phone call. It's important to me, so feel free to reach out if you want to chat about the market or anything else.
Amazing, David. Thank you so much for your time today. As always, that was a great episode, and we really appreciate it.
Corey, great chatting with you.
Thanks so much, David. Take care.
Put a quarter in and let them go.
There you have it, folks. Our interview today with David Bash, President, Astria Properties. I love having David on the program. So insightful.
I listened back to this one. Great conversation. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there. But man, yeah, insightful guy. That is for sure.
Yeah, definitely has his finger on the pulse. And one thing you probably notice right now is you probably see more like development land for sale and more foreclosure sales on development land than I can remember, at least in the last 15 years. And there's a lot of developers out there, and I'm not painting a brush of anybody, that may not be as knowledgeable as some other developers out there, because, like, you know,
takes all kinds.
Yeah. 2016, 2018, everyone was a developer. I bought a property on Cambie Street. It went up $2 million. It's me, not the market, right? Yeah. So I'm going to sell it. I'm a developer now. So David is one of those that you'd put in the bucket of extremely knowledgeable and like knows his stuff. So it's a great conversation, great insight. We're talking all about, obviously, and then we talked about Alberta as well, which you probably heard on the program. You know, really insightful guy. One of those guys you'd love to get a beer with or a coffee and just pick his brain.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys. And you're going to leave that conversation far smarter than you went into it. There's a thing in business where they say, if you ever want to be successful, make sure you're the dumbest guy in the room every time, alluding to the fact you want to surround yourself with smarter people.
Right.
He's one of those guys that you want to go into the room with.
Right.
Because you're going to walk out with a lot of knowledge.
Well, I love that. Yeah. Surround yourself. I was trying to think of where I fit in this room. And yeah. I think I'm doing well. But, yeah. You, yeah. but have an issue.
But when I come into your room, I'm taken from you guys.
You're the guy. You're the guy we want to surround ourselves with. Anyway, yeah, the great conversation. Really nice bow on that, Corey. I like that. So what else do we have before we cut for the day? Well, I should say, and I don't know if I'm the only one who says this, but all these commercial real estate podcasts exist on William Wright.
Yeah,
right, on your website?
Our website, williamwright.ca. You can find them. We have an amazing lady, Danica, that stays on top of all that stuff and promotes the podcast for us. She has them up there like literally the day after James has them posted.
Yeah, that's right. And they're also at vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. So check them out at either one of those locations.
Either one.
And we'll be back next week.
Another great episode next week.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Subscribe today.